Good morning. My name is Kelly Cavanaugh, and I am now the Evaluation Project Coordinator for the Office of Practice and Community Engagement at the University of South Carolina. It's ironic because, yet again, my title has changed, which goes hand in hand with our presentation, talking about how these roles kind of evolve over time. And I also want to give credit to my boss, Dr. Lillian Smith, who is now the Associate Dean with the Arnold School of Public Health Office of Practice and Community Engagement. And also, I have no financial relationships to disclose of commercial interests. Okay. So, learning objectives for this presentation is to describe the key components of the academic partner's facilitative role when it comes to community academic partnerships, and identify the infrastructure that you're going to need with team-based community academic projects. So just a little bit of background. In about 2012 in the summer, we developed a partnership between Kershaw Health, which is a nonprofit hospital organization, and the Arnold School of Public Health. And we did this mainly to help them complete their community health needs assessment, which is now the requirement for the Affordable Care Act. And so the goal was really just to help complete this with them. And one of the things we learned from this experience is that the Affordable Care Act is an asset that academic partners can build upon with communities, but the role of how to be able to do that effectively really is the question. And so what it is, it's a balancing act. There's a really fine line between the community and academic roles. And what we've learned from this is that the academic partner's role is really just to facilitate that kind of the startup project and provide them with the best practices, the tools, and the things that they'll need to be able to do these things. But the thing is that we're not necessarily leading them. We're helping them in this process. And so some of the questions to consider is, how do you help the decision makers without actually being a decision maker? And then how do you help the community organically lead itself? And so those are the things that you really want to have in the back of your mind when you're taking on these relationships. So then if our role is to help facilitate the startup process but not lead the process, then how can we actually work collectively? So the answer is to develop a functional team for community work, some sort of backbone structure that you can always kind of come back to. And also to allow the partner and team roles to evolve with the project, because what you're going to need at the start is not necessarily what you're going to need 2-3 years later as you start to develop. Your grassroots are going to be different than some of this implementation-based work. And for an example, we started with 4 partners around the table, sitting with a bunch of worksheets, trying to figure out who's doing what in the community. But then as we evolve, now we've got 20-30 partners at the table kind of all trying to do this together. So the infrastructure is going to change over time. So the amount of people you might need to work on the project or hire at the start are going to be different than what you're going to need when you're actually doing the implementation, evaluation, and monitoring of these things. So this is what we did. They hired me, research associate. I was very grateful. Just out of my master's program and looking for a job. And it was my boss's boss. I'd actually worked with him on some clinical-based work with physical activity. And he was like, you got to work on this project. And I was like, I don't know. So once I figured out what it was, I was really excited about it. So when we started this project, what happened is I was doing all 3 roles, okay? I was doing the coordination, I was doing the outreach, I was doing the evaluation, you know, gathering the data. So things included developing a project framework for this, collecting and analyzing data, facilitating the community meetings, conducting outreach with community members, coordinating coalition activities, and then representing the organization and kind of this community coalition at the organization meetings. And so what happens with that, we realized about a year into it, this is not working, right? So what's happening is I'm facilitating a community meeting. We're using the MAP process. We're walking through all the different steps. And one of the steps in the MAP process is where you get to that point that you've got all your data. And from there, you're identifying your strategic issues, and then you're prioritizing them. So we start getting into this process, and you can tell people's energy is starting to go down a little bit. And then finally, the medical director for the free clinic just throws her hands down and goes, Kelly, I'm tired of this. She's like, just tell us what we're supposed to do. Tell us what the priorities are and what we're supposed to do, and then we'll just do them. We're doers. We're great at it. I'll go call whoever. Just tell me what you want me to do. This is a problem. So for those who aren't familiar with the MAP process, it's very grassroots based. You have the community self-identify the partners. The community is driving the process, and you're supposed to facilitate it. Because I had a liaison role, and half my salary was from the hospital and half was from the university, it then became clear that from a startup process, that's fine. But then when you start to get further along, it doesn't work. Because when you're so vested in the community, and I'm going there half the week and I'm attending their community meetings, they see you as a community partner, as a community person. You know, I know their families now. It's a very rural community. But then when I'm trying to get them to do meetings, they're looking at me for the answers. My role is not to give you the answers. It's to give you the tools to be able to do this work yourself. And that became our problem. The other thing, too, why you need to expand is because the project expanded. So once we came up with our community health, or CHIP, Community Health Improvement Plan, we were given an opportunity from the Department of Health and Human Services to implement part of this, or one of our priority areas, which was access to appropriate care. It's not affordable care, but it's, are you going to the ER when you should be going to the free clinic or your FQHC? And so when that happened, as the project expanded, we realized we don't have the capacity with our, you know, unincorporated little community coalition to be able to do all these activities, and yet I'm still supposed to be collecting the data and coordinating and evaluating and outreach. Doesn't work. And so that's why your infrastructure is going to need to change over time. So what worked well? Well, I mean, by having one person at the start, you saved a little bit of money. You know, so hiring one person that can do all those things and kind of get the people moving and shaking helps. And then also by being able to start out slow, it's what we call kind of a learning phase. So learning phase for us was in the MAP process. It's where you're organizing, you're doing visioning with the community a little bit, and you're getting them to that data collection process. But when you actually start weeding through the data to do implementation, that's when it's more of the doing process. And so with the learning phase, it allows us to figure out what was the best structure for us so that we could hire people very consciously and make sure that they were actually the best fit for what it is we needed. So what are the issues? You know, what we learned is that when the project progresses, one person cannot serve all three roles. They can't. The facilitator, like I said before, is being seen as part of the community. And the facilitator is someone who needs to be neutral. They need to be a neutral person. They're not there to bring their ideas to the table. They're there to get the community to where they need to go. Each person or each position requires a very different skill set. So like I said, the facilitator needs to be neutral. They need to have great adaptation skills. They need to be very flexible. Versus like someone like your project coordinator, they need to be logical. They need to be thinking about kind of that next step. And again, too, the maximum work capacity is reached. Your one person can only do so much, and everybody else is waiting on you. So then there's an efficiency problem. So you do kind of need to start to expand a little bit, and the question is how. So one of the things we're proposing now is kind of this backbone structure. You need one person that kind of does your governance, and maybe that's two. You know, you could do the project manager and a coordinator, depending how big your projects are going to be. Then you have a community engagement person who's your facilitator, and again, that person is neutral. And then you have your measurement, so someone who's doing either a data manager, an evaluator. Now we have a health economist who's going to look at the large-scale impact of our implementation activities. But the thing to really notice here is that these two roles are absolutely not the same. They're not. And that's where, again, we kind of fell into this pitfall, so to speak. So again, maybe when you're starting up and you're finding the right people, but when you're starting to engage those communities and get them to where they need to go, you're going to want two different skill sets and two different people. So we kind of broke it down, and here are some things you want to look at. So your facilitator person, again, they are the mediator and they are the neutral convener for your community groups. They do not interject their opinion. They empower the group to be able to think for themselves. And you want to look for someone who has great intuition and are adaptable. They have great skills with that. Your coordinator people are your doers and your delegators. Okay? They organize and they implement the project, help coordinate those activities. They may interject their opinion to figure out, okay, are we on the right track? Is this what we said we wanted to do? You know, we're implementing all these things, but what's our vision? And looking at some of that monitoring stuff. And then, so again, you want someone who's logical, planning skills, time management type stuff. Okay, and then the importance of maintaining a facilitator role. So again, by being able to do that, you allow the community to be able to take the lead. And you do that too by, when you're facilitating, you really want to ask open-ended questions, not yes-nos. And it's really the types of questions. You need to really think about it and something that gets them to the meat and the heart of what it is that you're trying to do. And there are tons of trainings for facilitations that can really help you and your organization ask the right questions. It also increases the sustainability of the initiative when you allow the community partners to be invested and take the lead instead of academia taking the lead and then constantly relying on you for, you know, not just the tools and resources, but being able to move the coalition and your activities along. It also increases the capacity of the academic partners because, like I said, you know, got to the point where we were just overloaded with work doing all the different roles. But if you can then kind of delegate the different roles out, you're then freed up to be able to do more of your actual role and then empower the other people to be able to do theirs. And then also decreases confusion about what the academic partner's role is because, you know, when you're showing up, it's like, oh, we're going to facilitate, you're going to lead it, you're going to coordinate it, you're going to do it all, and then it's just magically going to work and be great. It's not the case. So why do partners' roles need to evolve? So kind of like I mentioned before, you have increased foresight as to where the project's actually going. So when, you know, like I mentioned before, we had the four people around the table, well, we could see, okay, well, this is where we're going to go, this is where the funding is going, so we're going to need this type of structure. So you have to be able to keep up with that. So sometimes it's increased capacity or funding. So with us, you know, for a while we couldn't hire anyone, but when DHHS gave us the opportunity, now we hired a part-time health economist because they're also funding a very large chunk in evaluation with specifically with community engagement. And also some of our community partners too, then also some of their capacity freed up and we were able to expand. It also increases the community empowerment by being able to let them take on more kind of over time. And again, a lot of that comes from the less hand-holding because we start out with the process. Not a lot of people have done it before. Some of them don't get it, and they're so used to doing the same things all the time. Then afterwards, when they're continually doing it, then they don't need you to handhold. It's like, I got it. I've got my activities. I know where my support structures are. I know where I'm going. And when they have that kind of unified vision and they have that clarity, then they don't need the handholding, and they can just run with it. And again, the project starting from the shifting from startup to implementation, you're going to need different types of people, and so then it'll shift over time. So some of the needs your backbone team will probably have, they're going to need continuous meetings over time, especially when those roles start to evolve. You get a lot of question about, you know, what is my value to this project? I want to really be involved, but I'm not really sure where we're going. So you need to have those kind of check-ins with people over time and make sure that they're getting the resources that they need. And this, again, will change more frequently over time. So when you start up at the beginning and the change is much quicker, you're probably going to want to meet more frequently. But then once they get it and they feel a little bit more solidified in their role, a little more comfortable, then you can kind of branch off and maybe it's like once a month. But, I mean, there were times we were meeting like, you know, we had one check-in a week on top of maybe like bi-monthly meetings. So it kind of just depends. And then one of the things that's really important to do is always go back and visit your vision, mission, and goals. Because when it continues to evolve or evolve, you need to make sure, like, are we on the right track? You know, we said that, like, our vision, I think, for example, was, it was, there are a lot of things, so I won't get into it. It was very complicated. But, you know, we had a 5-year vision about, you know, having activity, appropriate infrastructure, and access to appropriate health, and kind of what all this stuff would look like. And, you know, when we started funding, following the DHH stress money, kind of sat down for a second and was like, you know, is what we're doing actually consistent with what we're saying? And if our mission is to become the healthiest county in South Carolina, are these activities going to get us there? And that's especially when your community partners start to question, you know, are we going in the right direction? It's really helpful to come back to that and then figure out, like, are we being true to what we said we would do? It's very important. I mean, we've done this, I think, just in the pre-implementation phase. I mean, usually every meeting we kind of check in, and that was helpful for us. Some other things are appropriate role-based training. So the training for your coordinators may be different than your facilitators. Like I mentioned, there's specific facilitation training. Some of them have been really great. Your data people, or, you know, maybe some SPSS and SAS. So just being able to check in with them and ask them too, what is it do you feel that you need in order to feel confident in your role? You also want an efficient project management system. That way too, people have something central they can come back to and figure out, like, are we all on the same page? And then a central data file storage system, especially in these roles with academic community partnerships, everyone's all over the place. If you have something common, especially when you're working remotely, to be able to come back to, it's really helpful. So key points about facilitators. Again, the facilitator and the coordinator, we highly recommend they are not the same person. And the facilitators need to sustain a neutral role. That is, like, number one for them. And then the lesson learned. Again, one person cannot sustain all three roles over time. Project roles need to evolve over time, and all three positions have different skill sets. And that's my contact information. So thank you.